my vulnerability, it became a strength. I needed to admit when I needed help. There is no point at which I felt like I got it all right. My career didn't need me at every single moment. It needed the best of me in those moments that really mattered. The idea of reaching out to the people you trust and connecting and building the relationships so that you do have a tribe, no matter who you're surrounded with, I think is quite an important lesson for me. Polished people who know where we're going and what we're doing and how we're getting there and having all the answers. I'm not sure that that's what people want from leaders anymore. They want authenticity.
My name is Sarah Kumalo, a businesswoman, a mother, and an award-winning mountaineer. I know what it feels like when the ground shakes beneath you. 3 times, Mount Everest sent me back down through avalanche, earthquake, and injury. 3 times, the world told me to quit. I kept going, and on the 4th attempt, I stood on the summit. Most would call the earlier attempts failure, but I learned something different. The shift is not the disruption. The shift is the lesson. It's not the fall that defines you, but the rise. Because true failure only happens when you stop taking the next step. In when shift happens, we explore the moments that break us and how they build us. Take a breath. The air is thin up here, and the views are worth it. Welcome to the Summit Journey. Let's go higher.
Welcome to When Shift Happens. In mountaineering, the higher you climb, the thinner the air becomes, and every step demands presence, balance, and intention. My guest today is Zureida Ibrahim, Group COO of one of Africa's largest financial institutions. She knows that climb all too well within the corporate space. After nearly 2 decades leading at the highest levels, her greatest shift didn't happen in the boardroom, but in her life and back at home. Becoming a mother revealed the bias and impossible expectations that work women are expected to have. But instead of retreating, she rose to the challenge by mastering what she calls the dual ascent, leading with strength at work and showing up fully at home and in life in general. Today, we explore how she built a career defined by courage, transformation, and compassion, how she continues to prove that empathy is the new currency of executive leadership. Zureida, welcome to When Shift Happens, and thank you for making the time today.
Good morning, Sara. Thank you so much for having me. It really is a privilege to be able to have this conversation with you this morning.
Exciting. Thank you so much. When shift happens and the world sees your title, Madam COO, who is really Zureida beyond that?
Sara, actually, when I hear you say Madam COO, you know, it reminds me of my kids. I'm actually like lighthearted. And actually, my kids say I'm not amusing, I'm funny. So sometimes at home, they're like, Mom, can you just act like a COO? But like on a more serious note, Sara, I think like who I am is really about the foundation that I stand on. I'm really lucky to have a family, a husband, my kids who allow me to be me. Sometimes a bit too much, sometimes not enough, but they're my foundation. I have like a really close extended family. So, you know, that thing about it takes a tribe. There's not much in my life that happens, you know, without the tribe. And I've got a group of really close friends, you know, that like fill in the rest of my time. I love nature and I try to spend some time in nature. I like hiking when I can. I fit in a run. I like cooking, not because it's something I do a lot of, but with little time, it's an easy way to express my creativity. Mm. So it's something I try and do. And the thing that I fall in every other free moment with is really just learning. So I'm still a voracious reader, maybe not so much of full books anymore, but getting in, you know, as much as I can about what's happening around me or understanding things better is still something I love too much.
That's amazing. I'm listening to you talking about hiking. I think your home is a hiker's paradise. You are the only person I know that has zebras as pets around your house, but but let's not go into that. So you became a mother early in your career, balancing what you call the dual pressure of grit and guilt, right? How did this shift or shape your rhythm between nurturing your family and climbing the executive ladder, as you have successfully done?
Sara, when we think about growth, there's no leadership program or any book that I've read or any experience at work that gave me the significant amount of growth that I've had in my life as when I became a parent. And not just for the parenting side of it, but for balancing this life, you know, where you wake up and go to work every day and where you want to do something meaningful and have an impact, with creating a loving home, being there in the important parenting moments. And then, of course, the not fun stuff, like, you know, having to pick kids up and the responsibilities that come with being a parent. And so it really has been a profound growth experience for me. And I think one of the things I had to really accept was that you can't really be there for your kids unless you are there for yourself first. So small sacrifices in each part of your life. So sometimes I had to make sacrifices at home in order to show up better at work. Sometimes I had to make small sacrifices at work in order to show up better as a parent. But what I learned is that in the long run, this will be better for not just me, but for everyone, for the people I serve at work, but for my family. And so they're a testament to the fact that I've managed to balance it. But did I balance it perfectly? Absolutely not. Did I do it consciously? Yes. I made choices, I made trade-offs, I made those sacrifices. But the challenge has always been about how do I make sure that, you know, I don't give the best of me to everything else and have nothing left for home. And that's something that I've always prided myself on, which meant that at home, I had to really figure out what those moments that matter are. You know, what are those moments that matter for my family? And so even though I couldn't be there all the time, I wanted to be a part of it. I wanted to be fully present when it really mattered. I think that my vulnerability became like something that it became a strength. I needed to admit when I needed help. So that's when I needed to phone my mom and say, hey, like this week I'm traveling. I really need you to be able to, you know, for the kids to be there after school. I needed to go to my husband and say, actually, like, you're going to have to pick up everything that's around for this time. And so I had to be vulnerable and reach out for help. And what I can tell you is that there is no arrival. There is no point at which I felt like I got it all right. Mm-hmm. I had to appreciate that, you know, my children didn't need a perfect mother. They wanted a present one in those moments that matter. My career didn't need me at every single moment. It needed the best of me in those moments that really mattered. And so I think my lesson is that you don't have to choose between, raising humans and raising the bar at the office. You have to figure out how to manage both of them.
What I hear you saying, Zureida, is that, yes, you do that, but you also need to have the right people around you, because you needed to have a mother that will, you know, be there when you couldn't, a husband that will pick up when you couldn't. And so it's not just, it's a village raising the family and not just you. That's beautiful.
Absolutely, Sara. And, you know, for not everyone has the same, like, family network or same social network, but the idea of reaching out to the people you trust and connecting and building the relationships so that you do have a tribe, no matter who you're surrounded with, I think is quite an important lesson for me.
Absolutely. So over the years, your leadership journey has evolved alongside your personal growth as I'm listening to you. What have those shifts, both in and outside the boardroom, taught you about legacy, balance, and what truly matters at the summit of success?
Wow, Sara. So becoming a mother, watching my children grow into their own people, navigating loss in my life, you know, reinventing myself, trying to find as much joy around me in what I do and the people that I interact with. Yeah, all these things have come together, I suppose, to make me who I am and have helped me evolve into who I am today. I think what I've learned is that, you know, the topic of legacy, we'll talk about it just now, but the topic of legacy has been something that's been, you know, on my mind quite a lot of late. And I've always thought, like, what is the impact I want to have? What is the thing I want to leave people with? You know, is it that, you know, I've built a better business? Is it that, you know, that we're more successful than we used to be? Is it that I built a great team? You know, is it that I've been able to give my family everything that they need to help fulfill their dreams? And I, you know, as I evolve and grow and learn, I've come to define it as it's not, you know, legacy is not, it's not the thing you've built, but it's the thing that you leave within other people. So when I think about work, I think my legacy will be the confidence I've left in the people who I believed in when others didn't. You know, I think that my legacy will be the culture that's left behind when I leave the room. Mm. I think my legacy at home will be the self-worth that my kids feel when they're on their own. And so for me, you know, that's all these lessons, these hard things have come to like teach me that is really the impact that I want to have on work, on family, on the people I interact with and touch in my life every day.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm actually going back to Everest in 2017 when I was left for dead. And I believe you stood up and moved hell and water and made sure that I was airlifted. So I think for me, that's part of the legacy that you've left with me. And I want to just take this moment and thank you for that. That's so beautifully put. I've never heard someone talk about legacy in that way. We always think about these big things that everybody see, but yeah, I'll also think about it differently. So thank you for that. Let's go to mountaineering. You know, we speak of base camp. So this is the place where you come and rest, you reset before the next push. You really come to base camp and reset before the summit push. So you've done everything, you've acclimatized, and now you need to go for it. You do that at base camp. I want to come to you and say, what are three simple and yet powerful rituals or practices that help you reset, you know, stay grounded, and that help you in your leadership when you feel it's heavy?
Thanks, Ara. I mean, you're not going to believe it, but it's probably simpler than most people imagine.
Yeah.
Like the daily one is an hour in the shower. My family liked a very long time to get used to the fact that, like, that's my quiet space. I take that moment. It feels like, you know, cleansing myself of all the worries and the concerns of the world. I think water has that impact on me, you know. It really, like, gets me ready for the day and everything that's there. So sorry, not as profound as one might think. I think I said it before, exercise, and particularly outdoors, like in nature, is one of those things that really, I don't know, it makes me feel like I can, you know, when you feel physically stronger, it's not always for me because I want to show people how toned I am or anything like that, but I feel strong and I feel like I can carry a heavier load. Mm-hmm. So exercise has like such an, it's quite important to me. And so it's one of those practices that I certainly don't get enough of. I mean, you know, look at me, but it's something I try to get in. But there's something else. And I really believe that it has a lot to do with what helps me carry like big loads and so forth. It's really a deep belief that the start of a new day is a new day.
Yeah.
So I, like, it doesn't matter how hard yesterday was. It doesn't matter how sad I got, or it doesn't matter how overwhelmed I got, or it doesn't matter how angry I got. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether, you know, how hurt I was. Mm-hmm. Somehow that peaceful sleep in between, mm-hmm. It has a real impact of regenerating not just my body, but my mind and my outlook. So I am that person that goes like, let's wake up and get it all. I don't have morning people in my household, so I can tell you they don't enjoy the energy that I wake up with every morning. But it's become something that I rely on, but also like a little bit of my superpower. You know, people mm-hmm. like ask me, like, how did you get over that? Like, it was so tough. And I just go, I slept, you know.
And I showered.
You know, exactly. And so that it's a real belief that, you know, today's another chance I have to go for it. It's another chance I have to fix that relationship. It's another chance I have to do better at that thing. And it's another chance to get in the exercise, the joy, that movie that I missed. It's just another chance, you know. And yes. Yeah,
today is another day. That's beautiful and refreshing, and we should all actually think that way. I think when we look back so much, we get paralyzed by what happened and forget that we need to move forward. And I think that's why this conversation for me is important about shifts. It's really about looking forward and not being fixated about what let us down yesterday. So every leadership really faces seasons of uncertainty and change. When shift happens in systems, teams, or priorities, how do you balance performance with empathy without losing your center or your people, both at home and at work?
Yeah, so I think the thing we know, is that change is a constant. You know, it's like a cliche, but like change is constant. And sometimes the level of change that is required is bigger than other times. And, you know, we have a word for that. It's transformation. Because, you know, when you really need to level something up, and generally that comes with a sense of urgency. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's a real need to shift something because the outcome matters. I think that for me, like a few lessons that I've probably learned the hard way, you know, I've been involved in transformation type of work for a long time in my career. Again, I can never say that it's one of those things that one has a playbook for, because the context matters, the people matters,
the
timing matters, and so forth. But I think the first thing for me is like really getting people to appreciate the why. So you've got to keep talking about why you are doing this until people stop asking why. Mm-hmm. And you just repeat it. You just constantly, constantly, constantly repeat it. I think what I've learned, actually, like a lot of what I believe about it centers on the idea of trust. Mm-hmm. We've actually got to trust that people will be able to appreciate like where we're going. So trust mm-hmm. them with the information. Mm-hmm. Trust that people will be able to appreciate that you don't have all the answers. So what I often find in these transformation journeys is as leaders, we're trying to get, you know, all the building blocks in place, or trying to make sure that we have everything we need so that we can share it and we can communicate it and we can mm-hmm. take people along with us. But what about if we trusted that actually the not knowing and not having all of the answers is not going to be completely detrimental for the people we lead and the people we work with to know? And so we have to trust that we can share exactly where we are with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a level of responsibility as a leader. Like, it would be irresponsible to share something that you think is going to cause more harm than good. But really trust that people will be able to make sense of why you don't have all the answers and what the next steps are and so forth. And so trusting people with the information that you have and the information that you don't have so that they can walk the journey with you. And then really being able to, for every decision that you make, is really just like always bear in mind that, you know, like who does this impact and how does it impact? And I'll tell you that another like lesson for me in these types of transformations and change has been that I don't have to come up with how it's going to impact you fully. Like I used to sit there and go like, okay, let's put down all of these stakeholders. What possibly or how possibly might it impact this person? Mm-hmm. Actually, what about if I just ask them? Okay. You know, so what about if I just ask them, like, you know, what is this going to do for you? Like, how does it change what you do? How does it change how you work? How does mm-hmm. it change how you feel about this? You know, does it change your motivation? Is mm-hmm. it going to get in the way of what you're trying to do? So how about we just ask people how it impacts them? And so it's bringing that diverse view into the change actually makes you richer. It makes you smarter. And it helps you figure out what you need to do next. Mm-hmm. So I think, Sara, my sense is that the more we involve people, the more open we are, the more we trust that people can handle it, the more we trust that people will get the urgency, the more we keep asking, okay, how might this impact you or someone you know or the thing that you do, I think the more likely we are to be successful. I think that organizations don't transform or systems don't transform because you've implemented some change. They transform because the people in the system, the people in the organization are changing with you.
Yes. Yeah. That's amazing. I guess that's why the co-creation, you know, worked so well, where, you know, they're making the solution with you and they're actually owning it. And many times, especially the olden day leaders always wanted to come out like, I know it all. And people say, oh, you know, so you figured it out. We just do what you said we should do. And this rate of success was much lower than it is when people co-create and they own the problem, because when it doesn't work, they quickly fix it with you.
Absolutely. And sometimes the answers are actually the answers are actually emergent. They emerge from the process. They, yes. You know, you get the answer when two or three people are working together. Like mm-hmm. you could have had an answer when you walked into the room mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden you get more ideas. Yes. You know, your point about co-creating, you get more ideas and putting those together actually presents a different path forward.
Exactly.
And so I think there's power in that. And, you know, when, as you were saying that, there's something, I think that the view of leadership as having all the answers or just the view of leaders as being these polished people who know where we're going and what we're doing and how we're getting there and having all the answers and just being polished. I'm not sure that that's what people want from leaders anymore. They mm-hmm. want authenticity.
Yes.
They want you to say, this is like, I'm very clear about where we're heading, but I am not really sure how we're going to get there. Mm-hmm. Help me figure that out.
Yeah, that's beautiful. You know, for many women leaders, vulnerability still feels risky. What would you say to those climbing their own mountains, carrying so much, both personally and professionally, yet afraid to show the softer side through the shift?
Wow, Sara. Yeah. So this is, you know, this is a big topic for me. I'm constantly trying to figure out and learn more about it. You know, around the power of vulnerability. It's complicated. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, we've been socialized into believing, you know, that like we have to show up. Strong means always being rational and not emotional. Mm-hmm. We've been socialized into thinking that if one is soft, you know, you'll be underestimated. Mm-hmm. We've been socialized into thinking that, you know, when you assertive, especially for women,
yeah,
is that you are you're difficult, or you're, you know, she's a bit extra. Yeah. You know, she's too much. She's intense. Yeah. We've been socialized into like, okay, but if I don't and I'm too guarded, then I'm aloof, or I'm, you know, I'm cold. And so we deal with a lot of these things. And so women dealing with all of these pressures sometimes has led to us showing up at work, actually performing leadership instead of practicing it.
Explain. What do you mean by that?
So we perform. We perform because we perform, like, I've got to be strong about this. We perform, like, even though you're overwhelmed by emotion, you go, oh, I can't cry. We perform and think, oh, don't be too loud in case they call you difficult.
Yes.
You know, instead of really practicing and being guided by what you value as a leader. I think our power lies in dropping that,
yeah.
You know, stop performing, mm-hmm. embrace your vulnerability. Mm-hmm. It takes courage, but leadership is a practice of courage.
Absolutely.
You know, it's so I think I've been challenged myself to actually become more of who I really truly am at work, instead of, you know, who people want me to be. As I think I said earlier, people don't admire perfection. You know, they follow authenticity. They follow real people with real vision, and who have the ability to take them with them. The people you work with, they don't need leaders who never struggle. Mm-hmm. You know, they actually want, they want to see people who struggle openly, and then they rise because they've taken deliberate action and they've been vulnerable in the process to rise. And I think there is nothing like giving other people permission to be themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, is that when we all show up, when we're ourselves, we give other people permission to be themselves. And like, I don't know, how do you feel when you walk into a room and you just feel like you have, you know, you can be who you are, that you're not being judged, you're not being asked to perform, you're not being asked to put in an act, you're not, you can just really be who you are. I don't know about you, Sarah, but that's like when I am unstoppable, you know, when I can truly be myself. Now imagine creating an environment at work, in your team, in the boardroom, where everyone feels unstoppable because they brought the best version of themselves, you know, to whatever is in front of them. I don't know, for me, that's certainly the kind of leader I want to be. When we do that, I've seen conversations getting more honest. Mm-hmm. When conversations are more honest, I've seen my teams and I get braver, yeah. With the decisions we make. I've seen us solve like complex problems faster and more creatively mm-hmm. as a result. And why? Because people are not spending their energy protecting themselves. They're spending their energy on the job in front of them.
Absolutely. And it's because they also know that you trust them enough to understand that when it doesn't work out, it's not because they didn't put their best foot forward. And that's when people perform. I just was taken back as you were speaking to the mountains. You know, the first time I rocked up on Everest, I was made to feel that I needed to climb like a man to be able to be successful. And after 4 attempts, you realize that I'm going to climb like a girl because that's what I am. And that makes a difference, because then you're not competing with anybody but yourself. If they are going to do it in 2 hours, but the requirement is to do it in 4, I'm happy with plus 2 hours plus, you know, and I'm not going to chase them because I'm going to run out of steam. Because getting to the top is halfway. And that's what's beautiful. You just get up there and you do you. And if you are around people that trust that that's your best foot forward, they'll have your back when you need it, and vice versa. And that creates a beautiful team effectively.
Yeah, wow, Sarah. I think that's amazing, right? I think what I'm actually hearing you saying is that, you know, getting to the summit is not about proving something to other people.
No.
Is actually, the summit is when you realize you don't have anything to prove.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah. You know, most of us are. So let me just say, I'm still working on that. You know, it's incredibly profound, right? That you actually arrive when you realize you don't have anything to prove to anyone around you.
Absolutely. Because
this is really incredible.
One of the things that, you know, I say in my book is about the fact that we are all uniquely extraordinary, and being ordinary is a choice. It's because I believe that everyone in the room has something to contribute, something powerful that uniquely comes from them. Now, if they stop being them, then what they put on the table is nothing but mediocrity. I've got one last question, which is our signature question. Because we know that life happens, life evolves. You know, one minute you are an intern, the next minute you are an admin, a manager, and there you go, you're in the C-suite. And the next thing, you're owning your own business. And what is required from you is different, but you are the same person. But there's a need to evolve as life moves on. So when shift happens in your life, Zureida, what did it teach you about who you are and who you are becoming?
Wow, Sarah. That's quite a question. I've had many shift moments in my life, and actually, may I continue to have many.
Yeah,
you know, it's the reason we become who we're meant to be. I have an incredible shift happening in my life right now. You know, you mentioned my family a couple of times and asked me about it. My oldest child, my daughter, will be married soon. She's getting married.
Congratulations.
Thanks, Sarah. Wow, what an incredible shift.
Yeah.
I completely underestimated the impact that it would have on me as a mom, just as a person, as a human. It made me start questioning things like legacy, like I said to you earlier. It made me start questioning my role in my family. It made me start questioning what I will do with my time. It made me really start asking, like, what was my role in raising my children? And so, as I said before, I started asking myself questions about, you know, what kind of a home will my daughter have? What will she take to her family, her husband and her children one day? Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of person will she take out into the world? And I realize that it's not the traditions that I'm passing on. It's not the practices, you know, the things I taught her to do in our home. It's the values. The values of things that we hold dear, the things that are really important to us. Those are the things that you pass down. It's the self-worth. It's really believing that she has what it takes to be a good wife, a good daughter-in-law, a good mother, you know, new friend to people, a new person in a wider, bigger family that's now being added to the one that she has. So it's the self-worth, it's the values that she will take down with her. And I realized that none of these things that I talk about were passed down in big. We didn't sit down and go, like, let's have a family lesson in values. You know, we didn't. Yeah. Those things didn't happen. They were the conversations in the car on our way to school or on our way on holiday. They were the conversations around the kitchen table while we were cooking. They were the responses she watched me give my husband when things got sticky. They were, you know, how I challenged her when she was doing something I didn't like. Mm-hmm. But more than anything, I think the thing that I am convinced of, and whether it's at work or at home, that thing that says treat your kids as if they are the most intelligent, honest, honorable, capable, loving beings, and they will show up like that, versus, you know, questioning, you know, like, are you sure you did that? You said, you know, did you, they tell you that they've studied, and you go, well, prove it. or they tell you that they weren't at your friend, or they tell you they're sick. You know, that's one. Like, you know, when kids tell you they're sick and they don't want to go to school. Mm. And, you know, that thing that goes on inside of you as a parent, you know, I'm responsible for getting them to go to school. Mm. Or actually believing that actually today, for whatever reason, maybe it's physically sick or maybe it's not their best day, but believing that there's actually something going on in there, you know, treating them like that. For me, learning that if I, like, you get what you give out there. The same thing applies at work. I have, you know, a philosophy that I learned very young in my career is that, you know, I call it the raincoat philosophy. So when I see someone at work, like almost, you know, when you see these big raincoats are always big and ugly. They're never slim and they don't make you beautiful. You know, they're puffy and they've got lots of space in them. But that raincoat philosophy for me about, like, when I see someone at work is that, like, I just expect more from them and they will fill the raincoat. Like, when you expect more from people, I don't know, most times in my life I have been impressed, I have been surprised on the positive side. People have risen to the occasion, as opposed to reducing people to our fears and so forth. And so the shift for me has really been about, I'll believe in you more than you believe in you. And it's helped me as a parent, it's helped me as a leader, it's helped me as a friend. And why not?
Yes, why not? Oh, wow. Congratulations once again. And I believe in her. I'm hoping that she'll be more than a leader in her marriage and as she moves into the new family and her career as well, Zureda. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that. So your journey serves for me, as we were chatting, as a reminder that resilience is a choice to continue ascending with grace rather than the absence of hardships and shifts. So shifts will always be there. When we choose empathy over ego and lead with courage, compassion in a world that requires certainty, that's when genuine shifts really start. Because legacy is based on how we behave as things around us change, not the titles that we hold, whether it's at home or in the office, or the victories that we get in accolades. And maybe that's the essence of leadership, you know, assisting others in climbing the mountain rather than conquering it yourself, assisting your children to be the best version of themselves, assisting your team to be the best version of themselves. And one thing that I picked up from you is let them feel the raincoat. Don't just have your preconceived ideas of what they can and cannot do. Allow them to surprise you and nothing will be impossible. So Zureda, thank you. Thank you again for your time, the nuggets that you've shared, and for making it into the studio today.
Thank you, Sara. It's been amazing chatting to you as always. Wishing you a day and, you know, the rest of the year of grit and grace.
Amazing. So thanks to the listeners. I hope you can feel the thin air in here. Remember this. Your greatest view isn't behind you. It lies beyond the hardest climb. The shift has happened. The question is no longer, why did it happen? But who you've become because of it. Don't wait for permission to begin the ascent. Don't let fear silence your potential. Seize the lessons, own the steps, and command the future. You've been listening to When Shift Happens with Sara Kumalo. Now the climb is yours to begin. Until next time, keep stepping and let's go higher.
Thank you. Thank you.
If you would like to explore some of the lessons and tools we spoke about today, you'll find them in the show notes. If today's conversation spoke to you, share it with someone that's facing their own climb. Together, we are rising, one shift at a time. When Shift Happens is a Jackpod original podcast by Jacaranda FM. Let's go higher.